This is John Daly in the great port of Westminster in London, England. High noon has come this 27th day of January 1649, the hour when Charles Stuart, King of England, will be sentenced to die for treason by this Puritan court dominated by General Oliver Cromwell. The king was judged guilty yesterday after trial that lasted 6 days. The death sentence will undoubtedly be handed down here today unless, and this is the great question of the moment, unless the king humbles himself publicly by offering to abdicate his throne. This great court here at Westminster, where this trial is being held, is packed with spectators and soldiers. Many dignitaries are in the special galleries overlooking the judges' benches.
January 27th, 1649, London, England. You are there.
Charles Stuart, champion of the divine right of kings, can save his life if he will recognize the sovereignty of his people. CBS takes you back 300 years to the great crisis in the struggle between English monarchy and Parliament. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. When CBS is there...
You are there.
You Are There, produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyenne, is based on authentic historical fact and quotation. And now...
London, the great court of Westminster, and John Daly.
To save his life by surrendering his throne. The 68 judges who have tried the king and will sentence him today have still not entered the great hall. They're in the painted chamber close by this courtroom, should be filing in shortly. Yesterday, the 68 judges finished hearing evidence, although the king was not present. For the first 3 days of the trial, he consistently refused to recognize the court's authority, and so the judges proceeded without him. Yesterday, the court announced its verdict of guilty. And with the announcement came an unofficial statement from Mr. John Downes, one of the judges. That statement suggested that the king can save his life if he will abdicate today before sentence is pronounced. Quincy Howe, in our headquarters booth here at Westminster, has been analyzing recordings of the trial for some clue to the choice that the king will make. Quincy, what do you think the king will do?
John, I don't want to make any predictions. But if the king behaves in court today, as he has on similar past occasions, he'll probably not abdicate. Once more, he'll refuse to yield, even if it means death this time. It was the king's insistence on absolute power in civil and religious matters that plunged England into 7 years of civil war that's just ended with the king's defeat and this trial for treason. Even in the prisoner's dock, Charles Stuart has insisted on his royal authority. Now, just listen, for instance, to this tape recording made last Saturday, the first day of the trial. The first voice you'll hear is that of Mr. John Bradshaw, president of the High Tribunal, as he addressed the king.
Charles Stuart, you have been charged as a tyrant, traitor, murderer, and a public enemy. This High Court now awaits your answer to the charge.
I would know by what power I am called here. When I know by what lawful authority, I shall answer. Remember, I am your king. I have a trust committed to me by God, and I will not betray it to answer a new and lawful authority.
Sir, you are tried in the name of the good people of England, of which you were elected king.
No, sir. England was never an elective kingdom, but an hereditary kingdom for near these 1,000 years.
Note here that the king held and still holds his person to be above the common law. He sees his throne as a trust committed to him by God. He made that claim again last Monday, when the trial resumed after a Sabbath recess.
Oh, sir, pretend what you will. You have not but power. But power, without sanction of law, cannot alter the fundamental laws of England. Sir, a king cannot be tried by any superior jurisdiction on earth.
On Tuesday, Charles Stuart again refused to recognize the court or plead to the charge.
Sir, and to the charge. I value it not, because this court has no validity. For me to recognize a new court that I never heard of before. Sir, I that am your king, I cannot do it.
The recorded excerpts of the trial, which you've just heard, would seem to indicate that Charles Stuart will not abdicate, that he will choose to die rather than surrender his powers to a tribunal of the people. But we cannot be too sure. The king has a long record of duplicity in his dealings with Parliament. In the past, he's shown himself to be clever and unscrupulous in defending his royal powers. Now, the one person next to the king himself who can speak with authority on what he may do is his queen, Henrietta Maria. Queen Henrietta is in Paris at the court of her nephew, King Louis XIV of France. She's been in exile there these past 5 years, since 1644. And she's just agreed to give an interview. So we take you now to CBS Paris, Ned Calmer reporting.
Queen Henrietta is with me here now in one of the small sitting rooms of the Louvre Palace, which is the Queen's residence in exile. Your Majesty, do you think the King will abdicate?
No. He cannot, he will not abdicate. He must not yield to that monster Cromwell.
But, Your Majesty, the Puritans, led by General Cromwell, maintain that the king is being sentenced because he led a treasonable revolt against Parliament.
The Puritans, sir, are the rebels. It was the Puritans who revolted against the authority of the king. It was the Puritans who passed the laws limiting the king's powers.
But, Your Majesty, the Puritans asked only for control of the militia, the selection of ministers and judges, and liberty to reform the church.
Only, my dear sir, only. Such demands are a complete usurpation of the king's powers. In the face of such demands, my Lord Charles had no choice but to raise an army. This was treason, sir. Treason then and treason now. My Lord and I fought it for 7 years, and we will fight it so long as the good God gives us the strength.
You know, of course, Your Majesty, that if the king surrenders his throne, he can save his life.
Yes, I know. My Lord and I are still young. We could still have many years together. We could live here in France. I was born in France. It's my home. And I could teach the king to love it as I love it. But all this is idle dreaming. My Lord Charles is a king. Royal he has lived and royal he will die.
But, Your Majesty, there is a way that the king could abdicate and still save his crown.
Oh?
Yes, it can be passed on to one of your sons, either the Prince of Wales or the Duke of Gloucester, whichever Parliament would choose.
No, that is no way. A crown abdicated is half a crown. A king, sir, by mercy of Parliament, is no king. Better that my Lord Charles die than surrender any part of his royal powers. We must not weaken monarchy, lest the entire royal institution be threatened.
Oh, Your Majesty is concerned, then, not only with the perpetuation of royalty in England, but everywhere in Europe, is that it?
Yes. The family of royalty is everywhere one. I am the daughter of a king of France. My sister-in-law is Anne of Austria. My daughter is the Princess of Orange. We are all anointed. This is our trust. This is the fealty we owe to God and to men to be royal. And royal, my Lord Charles, will be in death as he is in life. No, he will not abdicate.
Thank you, Your Majesty, Queen Henrietta Maria. This is Ned Calmer in Paris. I return you to John Daly in London.
Here in the great court of Westminster, a number of the judges have entered and taken their seats. Don Hollenbeck is among them with General Oliver Cromwell, so over to Don Hollenbeck.
General Cromwell will be with us in just a moment. He's talking to another judge now. General Cromwell is a man of 50, about 6 feet tall, very powerfully built. There's a brooding sense of power in his eyes. They are the eyes of a visionary, and yet there's a sort of down-to-earth quality about that face, a combination of religious fervor and the worldly man of action, even of sophistication. The general's coming this way now. General Cromwell, sir. Is it still the unofficial position of the court, as stated yesterday by Mr. John Downes, that if King Charles will abdicate, the court will set aside the death verdict?
Aye, that is true.
Then the court has no desire to punish the king for bringing civil war to England?
We are not concerned with punishment, sir. That is the prerogative of God. We are not, as the opposition paints us, bloody fanatics. We stand for the liberties of the people. If Charles Stuart will humble himself before the court, which is the instrument of the people, and abdicate his throne, he may save his life.
Well, if the king should refuse...
Then, much as we shall regret to do so, we will cut off his head with a crown upon it.
Well, General Cromwell, Queen Henrietta Maria says she believes that rather than endanger the institution of royalty, Charles Stuart will go to the block.
Indeed. Well, the king is a very charming woman. and very romantic. I have no doubt that she finds the prospect of her husband's martyrdom to the royal cause vastly appealing. She doubtless fancies herself as a martyr queen mourning her hero husband. Alas, I fear her royal husband will disappoint her.
How so, General?
The king will abdicate to buy time.
Time? Time for what, General?
Sir, what makes you think our agents abroad are idle? Do you think we are not aware that Charles Stuart is even now in contact with foreign powers? He has messengers who travel between Cotton House and the courts of Europe. Do you think we do not know that he plots with his royal kinsfolk abroad? He is inviting them to invade England with foreign forces to set him back on his throne. Do you imagine that we are not aware that these forces are already congregating? Sir, they are gathering in Scotland, in France, and in the Low Countries. And so he will abdicate. Yes, he will purchase time in the hope that those swollen-bellied monarchs of Europe will restore him to his crown.
Well, General Cromwell, if, as you say, the king represents a potential threat to England if he abdicates and lives, why are you disposed to let him live?
Because we have no fear of any foreign armies that Charles Stuart may raise against us. Armies of slaves led by despots, what can they do against free Englishmen? One free Englishman is worth 10 foreign slaves. No, sir. Let the king do what he may. Let him live or let him die, it is of no consequence. Today, in this courtroom, we shall see the doom of absolutism in England. Today, in this courtroom, free Englishmen will establish forever the supremacy of the people.
Thank you, General Cromwell.
Thank you.
While we were speaking, the vestibule judges entered the courtroom. They aren't judges in the strict sense of the word, but they're commissioners appointed by the House of Commons to try the king. 128 commissioners were appointed, but only 68 have served in the trial. The others refused to accept the nominations. They held that the trial of King Charles was illegal. Oh, Mr. John Bradshaw, the Lord High President of the Tribunal, is now entering the court, so back to John Daly. The court has risen. Mr. Bradshaw is taking his place at his desk. He's again wearing the fur-coated helmet that he's worn every day this court has been in session. He still fears that he may become the target of some royalist assassin.
Be seated. Every man and woman keep silence on pain of imprisonment and branding. Bring in the prisoner. Bring in the prisoner.
The king is entering the courtroom, escorted by a guard of Puritan troopers, and the crowd has risen to its feet in sudden disregard of the clerk's command for silence. The spectators are shouting, "God save the king, traitors, rebels." They have uncovered their heads, and as if in response to the crowd's tumultuous expression of loyalty to the king, the Puritan guards, anti-royalists for men, have begun a chant of their own. The words are justice, execution, justice, execution. The shouts for and against the king are crashing here in this courtroom. Let's listen to them. These spectators are sitting down. The king has seated himself in the prisoner's dock. He does not remove his hat. He's dressed in fine black suiting. His hair appears to be freshly curled and falls in ringlets to his shoulders. Around his neck, the king wears the insignia of the garter, and in his hand he carries a silver-headed cane. Now John Bradshaw is addressing the king.
You have several times been brought before this court to make answer to a charge of high treason against you. In the name of the people of England, you have refused to answer the charge. Instead, you have seen fit to question the authority of this court. The court is thus compelled to record your default and to proceed to sentence, a sentence which the whole court has agreed upon.
Sir, I desire to be heard.
Sir, you shall be heard in due time. You are first to hear the court.
Sir, what I have to say will be relevant to what I believe will be the sentence of the court.
You shall be heard in due course. In the meantime, forbear.
Sir, a hasty sentence once passed may sooner be repented than recalled. I desire, before sentence is given, that I may be heard in the plaintiff chamber before the combined houses of Lords and Commons.
As you heard, a request from the King to be heard before the Lords and Commons. This is completely unexpected, and my guess is that the King is willing to abdicate if he can do so. The King speaks again.
Sir, this slight delay cannot be prejudicial to you, and what I say will be well worth hearing. Therefore, I conjure you, if you love that which you pretend, the peace of the kingdom, grant me the hearing before sentence is passed.
Sir, you have now spoken, and that which you have said is a further denial of the jurisdiction of this court.
Patience, you say.
We understand you well. Gentlemen, let the king be heard.
That was Mr. John Downs, one of the judges, who rose and cried out, "Gentlemen, let the king be heard." The court is in a confusion again. Now, Mr. Downs speaking again.
We can anticipate what he will say before the Lords and Commons.
Mr. Downs!
And it is for the good of the kingdom. I say, let him be heard.
Sit down, Mr. Downs. Be speaking, sir, before you go.
Cromwell, that's Oliver Cromwell. The general is on his feet.
It cost me my life. I must say it. The king is making a fair offer. So let him be heard before the Lords and Commons.
Mr. Bradford, beset the court.
This
sets
the court.
This suddenly declared recess has thrown the courtroom into wild confusion. The spectators are pouring out of the galleries, milling about on the floor. The judges are leaving through a side exit that leads to the court of wards, and the king is being led away by the escort of Puritan soldiers who came into this court with him. Ken Roberts is down there in the well of the court with the spectators. Let's go down and find out what they're saying. Go ahead, Ken Roberts.
With me at our microphone are a fishmonger and his wife. I've asked them for an expression of their opinions. A woman seems eager to give them to us, but her husband is somewhat reluctant. What is your name, madam?
My name is
Mary. Please be reasonable.
Now you shut your mouth.
Evidently.
You pigeon-hearted, milk-livered, smock-faced midget. You can't say boo to a goose.
Oh, well, madam, what is your name?
You pay him no mind, lad. I'm not afraid of them round here.
Yes, I'm sure you're not, madam.
Oh, what would you know, lad? Question.
Oh, thank you. What is your name, please?
Mistress Mary Arthur. Oh, shut up. I'm the wife of Samuel Arthur, this fishmonger here, this gutless knave.
Well, Mistress Harper, why do you think the king wants to be heard before the Lords and Commons?
He's as blind as the fear in my Samuel's face, lad. His Majesty, Lord bless his sainted soul, wishes to abdicate and save his sainted life.
Well, why do you think he doesn't want to abdicate right here and now? He can save his life just as
easily. No,
your tongue, you rabbit, will not ram a fish down your throat. Bless your soul, lad. Tis all so plain enough. The king will not give an inch of satisfaction to General Cromwell and his Puritan rascals by yielding ear in court. Them Puritans, them roundheads. Tis them that should be in the prisoner's dock begging for mercy.
Thank you, Mrs. Mary, and you too, Mr. Samuel Harper. Now over to Don Hollenbeck at the other end of the hall. Go ahead, Hollenbeck.
With me here in a small chapel off the main hall is the Reverend Harold Masters. He's the vicar of the Anglican Church of St. Ethelbert.
Aye.
Mr. Masters, it seems to be the general opinion that the king wishes to abdicate before the Lords and Commons. Do you think the court will permit him to do that?
The court, sir, has no choice. The Lord rescueth and saveth. The Lord delivereth Daniel from the power of the lions. It is written in the book of Daniel, chapter 6, 27th verse.
Well, you mean you think the Lord is interceding to save Charles Stuart?
Aye, the miracle is coming to pass before our very eyes. Charles Stuart shall be delivered.
Well, Mr. Masters, why do you feel that heaven favors Charles Stuart above General Cromwell and the Puritan?
Why? Why? Because Charles Stuart is the spiritual leader of the Anglican Church. Because the Puritans are godless. They believe in freedom of worship.
Oh, then you don't think freedom of worship is a godly creed?
Certainly not. Freedom of worship is freedom to sin. Why, religious toleration leads straight down to the path of eternal damnation.
But, Mr. Masters, now, isn't this true that Anglicans and Puritans both worship the same God, and That only the form of worship is different?
Only the form of worship? Only the form? Look you, sir. If the first button of a man's coat be wrong buttoned, then the whole coat will hang crooked. Isn't it so?
Well, I couldn't deny that,
of course. Of course not. So it is in religion. The form, sir. The form is all important. There's only one true church, sir. The Church of England, of which His Majesty Charles Stuart is the head.
Thank you for your opinion, Mr. Masters. And now over to Quincy Howe in our headquarters booth.
Perhaps the best informed man in London on this question of the king and his whole relation to this court and parliament is Mr. John Milton, poet, pamphleteer, and an outstanding intellectual leader of the Puritan Party. Mr. Milton, do you agree that the king wishes to perform his act of abdication in the presence of the Lords and Commons?
Aye, it is a brilliant maneuver, worthy of Charles Stuart's subtle intellect. But, as all of the king's maneuvers, it is born of the blackest of motives.
Well, in your opinion, Mr. Milton, what is the king's motive in asking to be heard by Parliament?
Charles Stuart is attempting not only to save his neck, but also to nullify, to make void the act which Commons passed 3 weeks ago.
Mr. Milton, you mean the act which, in effect, abolishes the House of Lords?
Aye, the very same. That House of Lords, which, as heaven and earth can witness, has always been the merest tool and creature of the crown. Charles Stuart knows full well that if he be permitted to abdicate before Parliament, he will be re-establishing the House of Lords in all its overweening pride. Aye, and re-establishing the House of Stuart with all its ancient arrogance.
That's a most interesting explanation, Mr. Milton. If it holds up, do you think the court will permit Charles Stuart to abdicate before the Lords and Commons?
The court must refuse. To do otherwise would make a mockery of all that free men have fought for and won in the past 7 years. It would open the door to a return of political absolutism and religious tyranny.
Mr. Milton, if that's the case, do you think Mr. Downes was aware of the danger when he suggested in court here just a few minutes ago that the king's request be granted?
Mr. Downes is a man of excellent character. I admire his gentle sentiments. But his political acumen leaves much to be desired. Mr. Downes says, let Charles Stuart abdicate on his own terms before the Lords. What matter so long as he yields the throne? But Mr. Downes fails to see that abdication on Charles Stuart's terms will simply perpetuate the absolute powers of the king. The king, sir, in defeat would emerge victorious. The people, sir, will have won a Pyrrhic victory.
Do you think, Mr. Milton, that was why General Cromwell recessed the court so abruptly?
It is indeed. If I know my general, he is at this moment instructing Mr. Downes in these matters.
No matter what happens, Mr. Milton, there's going to be surely a new government in England. Now, which one of the king's sons do you think will rule? Will it be Wales or Gloucester?
Neither, sir. The people shall rule. We are in the grip of great tides. Giant waves are bearing us away from the past. We move towards a new shore. There is a word forming on the lips of men. An ancient word known to Greece and Rome. A word reborn in the hearts of Englishmen. The word, sir, is republic.
And yet, Mr. Milton, it doesn't look as if the people favor a republic. They seem to love the crown, to want a king.
The people are like children, enamored of kingly pomp and ceremony and pageantry. They are misled and corrupted.
Mr. Milton, can a republic be established in England against the will of the people?
Sir, it must be established. We must purge the English people of their sickly love for kings. They must throw off the silken yoke of royalty and stand erect. Englishmen must learn that each, even the lowliest, bears within himself the seed of greatness.
Thanks ever so much, Mr. Milton. Now, while we've been talking here, the judges and Charles Stuart have re-entered the courtroom. The court is about to reconvene, so back to John Daly.
Mr. John Bradshaw, president of the court, is addressing the king in the prisoner's dock.
Speaking to the Lords and Commons. Charles Stuart, this is the court's reply to your motion to be heard before the Lords and Commons. Whatever you may have to say regarding the settlement of the kingdom, let it be said here and now in open court. Otherwise, the court will proceed to the sentencing.
Nay, but surely,
if you have something to say, then say it here and now in open court.
I cannot. Sir, I cannot speak here. Sir, many things have been taken from me, but I still retain that which to me is most dear, my honor. And in all honor, I cannot make my statement to this court, which I do not recognize. Therefore, I charge you, if you would avoid future sorrow, if you love England, give me leave to be heard before the Lords and Commons.
You have heard the judgment of the court.
Then as you shall answer for it on the dreadful day of retribution, consider your answer again.
Sir, you are not to be heard before the Lords and Commons.
By your leave, in the painted chamber, the Lords and Commons.
Sir, if you would speak concerning the settlement of the kingdom, speak here and now. Else be silent and hear the sentence of the court.
I will hear the sentence of court.
The clerk will now read the sentence, which is the act, sentence, and judgment of the whole court. Whereas this high court...
Charles Stuart has chosen to die rather than abdicate in this court, and the clerk is reading the sentence. The king stands in the prisoner's dock, his hands grip the rails, his head is thrown back defiantly. With one regal gesture, he has sacrificed wife, children, throne, life itself, rather than yield his unshakable belief that he was anointed by God to be King of England.
January 27, 1649. Charles I is sentenced, and with him dies the divine right of kings.
You have been listening to the sentencing of Charles I, King of England, another broadcast in the series You Are There, produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyenne. The sentencing of Charles I, King of England, was written by Michael Sklar and Mr. Cheyenne. Anthony Kemble Cooper played Charles, Taran Thatcher was Cromwell, Inga Adams played Queen Henrietta Maria, Richard Waring was John Milton.